You've probably noticed that the theme for the 2024 International Women's Day is Count Her In, Accelerating Gender Equality Through Economic Empowerment. This episode is dedicated to exploring the pivotal role that investing plays in advancing gender equality and empowering women economically. I have the privilege of talking with four extraordinary women, each of them doing their own awesome thing in their own right. And they're here to share their insights about investing, on how they've navigated starting to invest, the investing world, and all this underpins this whole thing about empowering women to be strong financially. This year's theme, Count Her In, is not just a call to action, but a reminder of the urgent need to include women in every conversation about financial and economic development. Through our discussions, I aim to highlight the importance of financial literacy and why we do this podcast to encourage every single person to start to invest and continue to invest. So whether you're well-versed in the world of investing or just beginning to consider your financial future, I can tell you this episode's for you. It's a bit longer than the average bear, but that's okay. Join me and my four guests as we celebrate International Women's Day by amplifying the voices of women who are leading the charge towards a more inclusive, equitable, and economically empowered future. Now, before we get into the episode, this episode is brought to you by ShareSite. ShareSite is a comprehensive online portfolio tracking and management platform designed to simplify investment tracking for individuals, self-managed super funds, and financial professionals. It enables users to effortlessly monitor the performance of their investments across various asset classes. That could be stocks, could be ETFs, could be shares, could be managed funds, and even cryptocurrency. And get this, across various platforms and brokerages. So you can plug this into your Superhero, your Sharesies, your Perla, your Self-Wealth, and it will feed all your transactions into one place. So invest in yourself today. Visit sharesite.com/thisismoney to get started now, or check out the link in the show notes to see an exclusive offer to receive 4 months free on their premium plan just for listeners of This Is Money. My name's Glenn James, and this is Money.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
First up, I'm talking with Victoria. Victoria, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hey, before we ask you all the investee type questions, tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I am a teacher, a high school teacher and head of department, 43 years old, and I've been teaching. This is my 21st year of teaching, so I've been in that field for a very long time. I have a 10.5-year-old son, and I'm a solo mum. We live in Sydney, and we're just really enjoying life at the moment. And yeah, it's a very busy lifestyle that we have. I have a busy job. He's got lots of activities, and you know, we try to get out and enjoy life together.
Yeah, awesome. And what subjects do you teach?
Music.
Awesome. Any particular instrument that you enjoy more than others?
I'm trained as a vocalist.
Awesome. That's so good. Well, let's get into some investor questions.
Sure.
What does money mean to you?
At this point in my life, I would say that money is a means to an end and a necessity, and it really provides opportunities for our lifestyle. I love where we live, and I like being able to provide a really awesome lifestyle and locality and be close to work and all those sorts of things. So money is, you know, it's such a privilege to have. And I feel really lucky that I have a good career that I'm able to provide.
And do you rent where you're living, or do you own a property?
I rent.
Yeah, awesome. So if we talk about investing in the future, what got you thinking about starting to invest?
Sure. So after my separation and divorce, I pretty much had to press restart and do a whole lot of quick learning. I gave the responsibility of looking after money to my son's dad, and I was quite happy to do that, and he was really great at it. And I basically didn't, you know the bigger picture of things that were happening. I won't go into that. But when we separated, I basically needed to start from scratch on budgeting and getting, you know, being responsible for a small child and paying rent and all of that. So first up for me was really getting all of my finances sorted, and I was dead set on not having any debt. So I don't, I've got a credit card, which I don't use, and I have no debt. I also don't have a mortgage, but I'm very, very happily set myself up that I can live within my means. I can save, I can now invest, and also live the lifestyle that we want to live. I love shopping and I love all the things. So I try to provide for us all those things. So
the thought about investing came from an experience, and I've got to control my own money, my own destiny now. So what would you say today is the reason that you actually invest?
To provide for the future, and knowing that I've started this, I was pretty much 40, I suppose, when I started this journey, is that I'm well behind where I could be. And I'd like to be able to say that when I retire or, you know, stop work, that I have some sort of backup. I've got super, I've got, and I'm happy with that. But who knows what can happen? I don't want to be in a position where I can't look after myself or be able to provide for my son as well.
So since the separation and even the last 3 years, like, has your view of money changed since that, and also the actual investing and seeing your account increase and grow?
Yeah, sure. I have a lot more respect for money. I see, you know, that every dollar has its purpose, and I try to make it that way, that everyone has a job, and we also work together. I think that, you know, my money works for me as much as I work for it. And there's that mutual respect there if money was a person.
Yeah.
I suppose that's been a developing thing, is that through trial and error, that's been a building relationship there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in my money book, I kind of was thinking about this stuff, like, you can't command money if you don't respect it. And it really is a two-way street. Like, if the money isn't respected, it's going to walk out the door.
That's right. And I know that I love to spend.
Yes.
So
you're in good company here then.
So I like to have, you know, I've got probably, I think I've got about 10, not 10, maybe 8 accounts in my bank account. Everything has a purpose, and it just makes me feel excited when I know that everything is where it should be, and I've got an account for this is where investing money will go, and then I push it across to my platform. So
before you had this money awakening almost, you know, either learning about investing or going through that separation, were there any goals that you wanted to achieve financially before you started committing funds to a quote-unquote investing account?
Sure. Mainly providing for school fees that were coming up soon for my son. That's still something that I'm working towards, and also just making sure that I was able to provide for our lifestyle and where we live. I thought that was a really important thing for us before I could invest. I was lucky enough to walk away with some funds from our marriage, so that I knew that there was that sitting there. I didn't know what to do with it at that point, but I also knew I didn't want it to eat into our lifestyle.
Yes. I mean, it's just so important. Number one, have that mindset of this capital can't just be absorbed.
It so easily could.
Yeah, pretend it's not there and have it go to work.
That's right.
Moving to some actual investing practicalities now, when did you actually start investing, and what did you first invest in?
I think it was around 2020, and I was a bit nervous about investing. So I decided that Raise was going to be my investing of choice. I think that lasted about 6 months because I got bored.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I see what this does. Mm. And then I started doing some more reading, and then I eventually decided to invest a bit of a chunk of money. So I spent a bit of time working out what to do. And I wasn't sure if I was going to say this or not, but a girl I went to school with, and she's a financial what are you called? Influencer.
Yes.
And she probably got me started reading like some of her stuff. So,
awesome.
And there was one post that she put on, I don't know if you know this is allowed or not.
Yeah.
But she screenshotted her, what she invested in. And I looked at it and went, well, if she can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
So I literally just zoomed in on the picture of what she invested in. And I saw, okay, this looks like it would be an Australian. And I was like, I'm just going to do it. I had no reason to do it. And that was SPY and NDQ.
Yep.
So I ended up putting a chunk of money into yeah. both of those and evenly distributed them. I couldn't even tell you right now what really they is part of it, part of each of them.
And what do you invest in now? The same two funds?
Yep. So I've still got the two. I had two platforms going at the time. So I had I had one with that kind of sum of money, and then I had the other one which I started on. That was the one I started building on. And I now have VAS and VGS and then a VDHG which I started for my son.
Mm.
But after listening to your Investing with Kids episode, I've kind of slowed down the investing in that one just so I don't go over the tax issues. So I'm just kind of slowing down on that.
Yeah. And I think you've highlighted a couple of things in terms of financial influencers. Like as a net positive, it has given you confidence to invest, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know what NDQ was at the time?
Not really.
Yeah, and that's and I think that leads into the negatives, right?
Yeah, sure. Look, and I, you know, it's performed not too badly.
Oh, I bet it has, yeah.
And, yeah, I just, it was one of those things. I obviously don't want to get rid of it now because it's been a few years and, yeah.
So you'd probably, have you looked under the hood more at what's in NDQ versus the SPY? Because you'd probably find there's a heavy, heavy overlap.
Yes. Yeah, there is.
Yeah, so that's interesting there. There probably is. And those, so the NDQs, for example, because it's such a high concentration to tech, it goes good until it's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, I'm not here to say do it. I'm just
No.
It's, yeah.
And I'm in it now. And I'm like, if I've learned anything, it's just stick to it.
So. Yeah, and well, but also the decision is, because you've got skin in the game, how do I now fully understand what I'm investing in?
Yes, that's right.
And do I deploy new capital to more broader indexes? So, and that's not something that we can chew on and answer right now, but it's just that whole awesome, so good that you got started.
Yeah.
Let's keep learning.
And that's why I haven't got lots of different company, lots of different ETFs because, I haven't probably researched enough to start to diversify it that much.
Yeah. Sounds good. And how regularly do you invest?
I'd say mostly monthly.
Yeah.
It just depends of how much I've saved that I'd put regular amounts into an auto invest. And then whatever I've saved the end of a week or month, I kind of chuck in there as well. So it depends when it hits that auto invest button.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. And what platforms and or brokers do you use to hold your investments?
Now or Perla.
Yeah. And how do you track dividends, distributions in terms of your tax, for example?
Oh, sure. My accountant helps me with that.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I actually haven't told you this, Victoria.
Oh, no.
No, it's totally fine. ShareSite is actually going to sponsor this episode. Now, that's an online platform that you can plug into your Perla account, right? It's free up to a number of trades. And basically what you can do, it plugs into the API at the other end of Perla, so that will keep all your tax records for you. So
that's amazing.
So at the end of the year, you can actually print a report and give that to your accountant.
Yes. Okay.
And that's kind of, you know, ShareSite really, they were doing some other stuff for International Women's Day. And I'm like, hey, do you guys want to, you know, I want to talk about investors. Do you want to support this episode? And they're like, yes, sweet. So full disclosure, everyone, happened to trip over a perfect use for ShareSite embedded into the conversation.
Yeah, it's probably the side of investing that I haven't looked as deeply into.
So, if we go back to your investing goals, what are they at this time?
I don't have specific goals for investing as such. I think I just want to be consistent and just keep chugging away at it, because I have more like shorter term goals at the moment that I need to tackle. So it's really just been consistent.
And I would say, like, if you said to me, hey, Glenn, what's your investing goals? Actually, ask me my investing goals.
What are your investing goals, Glenn?
To build wealth for future Glenn.
Yeah.
And that's totally a great goal, because if we're living on less than what we earn, which you do, you don't have debt and all that stuff, and we are investing for future Victoria. And what an awesome goal.
Yeah.
In terms of, and you know, you touched on before, like the school fees, I think if you are just having the mindset of I'm building wealth,
yes,
when the time comes, you may have, you know, if you're like, oh, I do need to draw down a little bit to fund the school fees, well, that's obviously an option as well, right?
It is, but I would like to be able to have that money there that I'm not then pulling it out of my salary that comes in all the time.
Yeah.
Had I been able to start this maybe 20 years ago, perhaps the investments could have paid for the school fees down the track, but it's too late for that.
Yeah. Well, hey, never say never.
Yeah.
your NDQ might quadruple in the next 10 minutes next time NVIDIA does an earnings call. Hey, anyone listening now who hasn't yet started to invest or is unsure what to do, what would you say to them?
I'd say it's much easier than you think it is. For someone who is a music teacher, who really finance is not my thing, it was more daunting than I expected it to be. And once I got into it, now I try and tell other people how easy it is. Just do it.
Yeah.
And I would start as soon as you can. My mum used to do day trading back a long time ago, and then she stopped. But when I said that I was investing, she's like, how do you have time to do that? And I thought, I'm not day trading.
Yeah. You
know, that was all that she knew. I don't feel like she understood the kind of set and forget idea.
And that's the difference, isn't it? There's this school of thought out there in, you know, people and money land that investing is trading.
Yes, that's right.
We're actually building wealth, and that's the difference, right?
Mm.
So if you started to invest today and you hadn't invested in, you know, everything that you know now, would you do anything differently?
Look, I think you'd probably work out that I might do a bit of more research before I choose my ETFs, but that would be the main thing, I think, would just be making sure that my values align with the ETFs that I'm choosing. Not that they don't align, but just be careful that there's not too much crossover between all of them.
Yeah, what, like, in terms of your risk profile, like, if you'd wake up tomorrow and your portfolio fell 20%, like, have you resolved that I understand enough that I don't actually need to sell now because I still own the underlying units?
Yes, I do. And there was a point last year, it was all in the red, and it was just for such a long time. And I was like, oh, this is like, and now it's like, I think only a couple of weeks ago, it was all like 25% up.
Yeah, it's
and
crazy.
I just was like, this is so good. And I see that roller coaster and go, okay.
Yeah. And I think as an investor, when you're a long term buyer, red just means today when I'm buying, I'm getting a little bit of a discount. Because
yes.
I don't need to, like, if the portfolio drops 10 or 20% tomorrow, that doesn't change the fact that Victoria is building long-term wealth. So we don't have to react.
I'm not very good at taking your advice on not looking every day, though.
That's all right.
I just love it. I find it really interesting just to see what it's done today. And that it's all still in the green, you know.
Yeah.
It's not going to change anything.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks so much for sharing a bit of your journey. Is there anything else that you thought I want to say or something you've been thinking about?
I think it's really important to make sure that you've got everything else in place before going into investing. I could see that people might get a little bit, like, jump the gun a little bit and go, I'm going to get into investing, but then still not be able to make ends meet on the other side.
Yeah.
So I think, if anything, I've definitely learned through this is I feel like I'm in a position where I can do it. And I know that I'm really lucky to be in the position that I am, that I can do that. yeah, it's probably the only thing is just make sure you got your ducks in a row before.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's nothing worse than like, oh, I'm going to invest this $1,000 and 3 weeks later, if it did dip 5% or 10%, oh, I need that $1,000 for rego. Well, you've just lost
that's
money.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. No, that's good advice. Hey, Victoria, thank you so much for joining us on This Is Money with your investing story.
Thank you, Glenn.
Radio, next up, I'm speaking with Rach. She's an investor. We're going to hear a bit about her story. I'm really excited. When I do these interviews, I want to talk with the interviewee before we hit record, but I was like, let's just hit record. So everyone listening to this, you're going in like I'm going in. I know nothing about Rach other than I got the time zone wrong when we tried to record this. So Rach, welcome to This Is Money. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your life stage and age, maybe what you do for work, what you like doing on the weekends, and your tax file number?
Yeah. So I'm 29, or just turned 29 actually this month. I have a husband and two kids, 2 and a 3-year-old, and I work as an emergency nurse just out of Brisbane, so shift worker. But yeah, we just live on our acreage property out here and really enjoy it. Lots of animals. Lots of wild kids, so yeah.
Yeah, love it. And anything you particularly like doing on the weekend or hobbies, interests?
Yeah, time with the family is obviously really important, but anything outdoors, to be honest, where our kids are born and bred outdoor kids. So no, just lots of landscaping, playing with animals and fishing and whatnot.
Yeah. So a random question that's not about investing. As a shift worker with kids 2 and 3 years old, how do you function?
A little bit, and by a little bit, I mean a lot of ADHD.
Yeah.
Look, it's definitely got its challenges, but I think you make what's important to you work, and our priorities are really clear. And, you know, we've had the same priorities since, you know, before we were married, so we just kind of continue that on, and we've got good supports. And shift work obviously is quite flexible in terms of looking after 2 little ones. So, yeah, it's busy, but we just say it's not forever.
Is your husband in healthcare as well?
Oh, gosh, no. I don't think we could cope if he was. No, he's a teacher.
Awesome. Love that. So if we get into the nuts and the bolts around this mindset thing, like firstly, what does money mean to you?
I think money just means the ability to afford what we need when we need it and just not having debt, essentially. I think that was the biggest thing. And growing up, that was something that was really important to me, was not having to take out loans for things that, you know, in my head we shouldn't have had to. Obviously, that comes from a big place of privilege, but also working really hard for that level of finance and understanding.
And what got you thinking about this whole investing thing in the first place?
I think it was just realizing how many hours I would have to work to get the money that I do, and just knowing that it's probably not something that's sustainable for long term, and just wanting the ability to be able to help support, you know, our kids, and obviously with the cost of living and the way everything's going, we want them to be able to afford what we've been able to, you know, without going into huge amounts of debt. So just being able to get ahead for us and our family.
Yeah. So that basically, the thought of that, like I need to prepare our financial, I guess, bedrock as best as possible for future us, that thought became the why. Like it wasn't, oh, I saw the Wolf of Wall Street and I wanted to screw people with lots of commission and make lots of money that way. Like it was a more of a organic why.
Yeah, ours is really long term. So it's something that I've never, my risk tolerance, like it's always been quite low. And we're more in for a long term strategy, and, you know, it was never going to be a day trading thing for me. As much as my brain wants to, I know that the logical side says no.
So when did you actually start investing in your own name other than superannuation?
Probably about 6 to 8 months ago now. Was just after coming across a couple of books, one of which being yours, and just having a read. I originally started with The Barefoot Investor, I think like a lot of people do, and structured things that way, but then realised, you know what, I think we need to do more than, you know, just what the bank interest can offer us, given how abysmal and small it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the last 6 to 8 months from putting some real money into an investing account, had that changed your view of money, or did it double down the why that you're doing it in the first place? Because, you know, at the time of recording this, we're recording this at the on the 29th of February. So this it's a 1-in-a-4-year window that we're recording this episode. Like, did your, you know, we've had a great 6 to 8 to 12 months on investing markets. And since you started 6 months ago, 8 months ago, whatever, you've probably only seen green in your account. So has that changed how you think about investing?
I think it does, but it also makes me realise how unpredictable the market will probably be in the future. But given the consistency of the average over, you know, because we're looking long term, you know, we're not in investing for, you know, a 5-year time frame. We're looking at 30, 40 years plus. To me, it just feels like it will average out. As much as I'm someone who checks my account every single day, I know I shouldn't, but that's just me. You know, I think it reiterates that, yeah, the growth is definitely a potential, and it's something that I'm seeing consolidate over that time period, and just from consistent deposits, I guess.
Yeah. Had you looked at your superannuation account much, because you've been in the workforce for many years before you started investing in your own name, had you looked at your super account that much or paid much attention to it? Because that's effectively an investment account, right?
Yeah, definitely not as much as I realised I do now. I think after understanding where everything came from and then obviously adjusting my investment mixes through super after starting the individual investments, I think I realised prior to that I was probably only checking it once a year, if that.
Yeah. And it's interesting how it's like when we start in our own name and have quote-unquote our real skin in the game, then we start to learn, like, oh, hang on, no, super is mine as well. I just can't get my mitts on it for a million years. So it does, yeah, it does start to change things. Now, you're collecting small children. was that one of your kind of family goals to start a family before we worried about investing? Were there any other goals that you wanted to do financially before you started that 6 to 8 months ago?
Yeah, I think our idea of how we were going to do things was always we were going to get married, get the wedding done, or before that we bought a house because we also thought, you know, if we can't afford the deposit for a house, we shouldn't be able to pay for a wedding. So to us, it just made sense personally to buy a house, then have the wedding and then have kids. So that was really important to us. But, you know, we wanted to be out of we didn't want to have to rent before we had children because of obviously the uncertainty and things regarding that and inspections and whatnot. So that was important to us. And then I guess the next thing on from there was having an emergency fund and a buffer in our offset just to make sure, again, the fear of if something goes wrong, you know, it could cost us a lot of money. I don't know, my head always goes to the worst case scenario. It was a point of safety. So, but also, you know, offsetting the mortgage in terms of the interest rates and where they might go. So to us, that was the order we did things. And then I only really came across the investing side of things, you know, recently. So then after we'd, you know, topped up our super to the max we could put in, then I thought, you know, it might be time to start venturing out into other areas.
So how have you've mentioned your partner throughout kind of your answers. Am I right to say that you've both been on the same page since, you know, even before you bought the house? Like, there hasn't been polar opposite views of money?
Yeah, correct. We've always been quite aligned in the way that the order we wanted to do things. And then after that, it was more, you know, stay out of bad debt. And we both hadn't really given it the time or energy as to where we were going to expand things from there because we just figured, you know, we've got good jobs and we've got a house, you know, an initial house. You know, we thought we were just quite content with that. But I guess the more I delved into investing and then was trying to explain everything that I'd been learning to my husband, he was just like, yeah, that's great. And he was quite happy to just go along with whatever I thought was a good idea because I've generally always overseen the finances and management side of things because I am very numbers driven.
Yeah. But it's interesting because generally, when you talk about educators and teachers, to me, you know, when I used to see one-on-one advice clients, you know, an engineer and a teacher, they've come out of the same box, like they're a pain in the ass. They want to know all this information. And that's good because, you know, they're just a detailed oriented person. But, you know, there seems to be a high level of trust where he's like, yep, I'm on the same page of direction. I don't actually need to get in the weeds of this. Like, I don't know, has he been interested in like, oh, what are you exactly investing in? Or is he like, yeah, it's all good?
Yeah, honestly, we're polar opposites in that way. I like the details of everything. I'm quite happy to become quite obsessed with something until I know everything I feel like I need to know, whereas he's very much Oh, it is what it is. Like, you know, just go with the flow. And I think
Is he a PE teacher or a woodwork teacher?
He's a PE teacher.
Oh, I guessed it.
It's not hard.
They're a different breed. They're awesome. I've got friends that are PE teachers. It's honestly the best life and the best job. If you're into health, fitness, sport, it's so awesome.
Yeah, ticks the boxes, absolutely. Most holidays tick.
Yeah, love that. So when you first started 6 to 8 months ago, what did you first invest in?
So initially, I just wanted broad-based ETFs. I just thought, you know, I'm going to start wide, start big. And that was in the form of S&P 500. So to start with, I looked at SPY and VTS, which are shadows, obviously the similar index. I did end up buying both of those, which I think in hindsight was more just me looking at numbers going, oh, yeah, that's had good growth. Oh, hang on a sec. No, VTS has had good growth. Not putting two and two together, they ran the same index. So I've got quite a bit in both of those, but I think outside of that, it was just Vanguard Australia shares and just trying to diversify, I guess, through country as well as the companies that were within those.
Yeah. So you're you're using the ETF VAS, V-A-S, for Vanguard Australian shares. And for your international exposure, what's the primary ETF that you're using?
It is 50-50 between SPY and VTS.
Yeah. And how regularly do you put money into your brokerage account?
I do it on a fortnightly basis. So it's just an automatic direct debit across from, you know, where we get paid into the trading account. And then I guess depending on what's going, if there's something that's, you know, an ETF or stock that's cheaper than what we would normally average, then I'll buy that once every fortnight to month. But yeah, it's the allocated amount of about $500 a month into shares and then extra if we get paid over time.
Yeah, sweet. And who's the platform or broker that you're using?
Through CommSec.
For example, are you saying there's an automatic payment out of your bank account into the CommSec cash account once a fortnight?
Yep.
And then you log in once a fortnight and will place a trade as per what you vibe on the day, or is it like I do 50-50 VAS and the 50% US shares? Like, is there any science there, or do you just vibe it out like I would?
Yeah, look, I do like being impulsive. So it kind of satisfies that side of things without the, I guess, the instability of betting. But look, it's, yeah, once a fortnight, I just make a decision based on, I guess, you know, the fortnight before, what I bought. And then I just try and keep things as equally distributed as per our plan, I guess, in terms of what our priorities are. So, yeah, that's generally how it happens.
And do you, or have you had a foray into individual companies and shares?
Yeah, so we've got about 15% of our total share portfolio is individual stock.
Cool.
And that's through, I think there's about three separate companies at the moment. And then the rest is ETFs.
Who are the companies? Are you allowed to tell us? We want the
inside goss. Yeah, absolutely. Look, one I regret more than others, but look, I jumped on the Pilbara train when I eventually got on there, not realizing, oh, look, it's growing. I'll buy and bought at a higher price. So that's the only thing that's in the red at the moment. But again, didn't put a huge amount in there. And then the other company is EMV. It's EM Vision. It's a company that sparks particular interest for me just because of working in the healthcare industry. It is a small company that is kind of going into the market of portable CT machines. So it and AI in medical equipment. So it's something that I see the potential in and I'm quite interested in following. So again, that's just kind of something on the side. And then the other one being CSL, I bought that when I was going cheap. So I just assumed, you know what, I'll just put it in there. It's a blue chip company. And I know I already get some exposure through VAS, so I didn't put a huge amount in, but yeah, just something else while it was going a little bit cheaper than usual.
It's funny because on this podcast, for those who have listened to this for some time, you'll hear me say like a year ago or 2 years ago, I'm like, I bought an individual share and then, you know, had a run and then I sold it. And they're like, I don't own any individual shares. And then, you know, writing this investment book, like we submitted the manuscript like last month or whatever. And I was like, remember writing it at this time, I don't own any individual shares. Anyway, like 2-3 weeks ago, I bought another individual company. And it is that framework of I'm doing it to keep me interested, but I'm not doing it with more than 10%. you know, yours is 15, same, whatever. Like there is a guardrail there.
Yeah.
So I really think that's awesome. Now, how are you tracking, like CompSec's a broker, how are you tracking your tax and reporting?
Absolutely. All of the shares we've bought are all CHESS sponsored. So we've gone, it just everything's gone through that. And then we'll go get our report at the end of the financial year. And I do also have running spreadsheets as well, because again, love numbers of anything I, you know, put in, put out. And I just feel like I'm, for the most part, buying and holding. So there's not a huge amount of change. There's not going to be, you know, any CGT applied because we're not really selling anything.
Well, it's just the dividend and the dividends, distributions.
Dividends, yeah, that's it.
So the CompSec account, is that in your name only, your husband's name only, or joint names?
It's a joint account.
Yeah, sweet. And what was the, there's obviously no right or wrong answer here, but like what was the rationale behind that?
At the time, I think we just wanted everything to be accessible by either of us if in the event, again, going to like a morbid side of things, if in the event something happened to one of us, I wanted the other one to be able to access things quickly. So that's how we've structured everything at this stage.
Yeah.
And look, I think, you know, as things grow and if we were to buy, you know, more investment properties, then we'd consider setting up a trust. But at this stage in our life, you know, it suits us.
And the thing is, I guess, you know, I don't know and I won't assume, but I'll make a bold comment with a great authority like I usually do. Like salaries are probably within the same ballpark anyway.
Like, yep, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of just makes sense for you guys. So no, that's awesome. So, you know, there was a question that I was going to ask about your investment goals at this time, and I'll put you on notice and tell me to shut up and go away if you can't answer this. Have you thought, like, you know, we've done the episodes on investing for kids and all that. Like, have you thought about the kids and investing and money and all that stuff? Or is your view just to, we're just healthy parents, healthy kids. If we do well, they'll be looked after. Like, where have you landed?
I think, in terms of like our share portfolio, we are kind of seeing that as a portfolio for us and for retirement. We would ideally like to have a couple of investment properties that we could potentially gift the kids in the future, or at least give them, you know, they could live there and then, you know, invest their money into other things and rent out to friends or whatnot. But yeah, I don't know. I think we just figure if we're doing well and, you know, our bank accounts look good and they've got a good, you know, something healthy, a healthy nest egg once we do pass away, or, you know, if we're able to take things out early or whatnot, just, yeah, we figure we're just in a better situation all around.
Yeah, awesome. Now, before we get on to the last two questions, I want you to give a shout out to your gals at work, because it was funny. I did a PDF file with questions and sent it to the four women. You know, I just called the document Investing with the Gals. And what did you reply to me?
I actually screenshot it and sent it to the girls in the group, because it's our investing group that we kind of have got, like I say, our book club is called Gals That Invest. So it's on our Facebook. And it's basically a bunch of us that I've kind of just had individual conversations with, or that I've had individual conversations with at work, because not a huge amount of people are very open with money and finance. Mm. And I just think it's something that should definitely be talked about, because especially, you know, being in a female, I guess, dominated industry as well, where, you know, there is a pay gap, where I just think, yeah, it's just so important for us to have those conversations. So yeah, there's about five of us. We get together once a month, go out for a cheap eat somewhere, and just chat about like where we're at, what our goals are, what we might have purchased recently. Yeah, it's just really cool. It's very wholesome.
And that's why I wanted to bring that up, because I want people listening to this to think about, if you have some like-minded people, it doesn't have to be friends, it can be colleagues at work where you chill with each other. Like, can you do something as a bit of a group accountability /social/, because it really isn't about the money. There could be some different incomes, but it's about that we all are here because we like building wealth for the future of us and our future, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, a lot of the time, because you spend a lot of time together at work, being shift work and a lot of overtime and things like that, you know, it's nice to have somebody you can talk to on your break, or, you know, exchange books at work. And, you know, if you're having a hard shift, we'll walk past each other and be like, financial freedom. Like, you know, it's just little things like that.
Are two of the girls that you're bringing to our Brisbane property event from your investing group?
Yes. Yeah, they are.
Oh, awesome. Well, it'll be nice to meet them. So shout out to the the gals in Brizzy who invest. So what would you say to anyone listening who hasn't started to invest just yet or is unsure of what to do?
Look, I think the biggest thing was just reading, listening to podcasts, any spare time you have. I find just obviously being quite time limited, getting in the car and just putting a podcast in. I've just got like a rolling list that goes through every episode that comes out new in the week. And I think the biggest thing is obviously, you know, getting rid of debt for us was the biggest part in terms of being comfortable with then putting other money elsewhere. But even if it's just small, just starting small, being consistent. And then as you come into the bigger amounts of money, then I just feel like you are more aware of how you can then handle it and how you should handle it. So, just small amounts, frequent amounts, and just let compound interest do its thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And if you started again today, because you're a professional seasoned investor, if you started again today, knowing what you know, would you do anything different?
Look, I think everything comes with like a lesson learned. I haven't made any huge mistakes at this stage. But again, that comes from, you know, a huge amount of diversification. I think, yeah, just looking at potentially the way I structure where I'm buying the ETFs and like in terms of, you know, whether that be SPY or VTS or things that are, I guess, domiciled elsewhere. From that side of things. But again, I think it was just a matter of just get my foot in, get started. There was a lot of anxiousness around just getting it done, just putting the first amount in. So I think just getting started, doing it frequently. And then just learning as you go. But, you know, only with what you're, you know, willing to risk at that stage, what you feel comfortable with.
Yeah, that's right. Because the good thing is, like with all the different investing apps and all that, you don't have to cough up $5,000 to have a toe in the water. Like you can do it with $100, $50. Do you listen to Nick's podcast, This Is Investing?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's seriously, like we produce that podcast. I have no idea what they're talking about or whatever they do, but I listen to it on a Friday when it comes out. Because I reckon he's like the funniest guy I know and he researches crap and I really enjoy that podcast myself. Well, Rach, thank you so much for jumping on This Is Money and having a chat to everyone about how you invest, why you invest, what you invest in, and having a bit of fun along the way. Thank you so much, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks in Bris Vegas.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for your time.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com, and click Get Help.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Next up, we've got Grace. Hey, Grace, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to get all into your story, your investing, and, you know, learn from you, be encouraged by you. Let's just start. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am 30 at the moment. I am just about to start working as a midwife in WA after quite a grueling degree. So I haven't had a lot of spare time the last few years. Just worked 7 days a week between a placement heavy degree and then a few casual jobs on the side as well. But I'm looking forward to having some time off. And yeah, I'd previously done a degree in film, so I like to do a bit of creative stuff on the side as well.
Yeah, awesome. And you don't mind if we tell everyone you're in Broome at the moment?
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, before we hit record, you were saying you're from Northern Territory, but I mean, Broome, just give us one little example of how remote it feels, because you've only just moved there to do this job, right?
Yes, that's right.
So what's it feel like being remote? Give us some crazy stories.
I don't know about crazy stories. It's. I thought because it was tropical, it would be kind of like moderate, and people think that's weird to say, but it's meant to be like just 30 year round, right? Because you're dealing with wet season and dry season. But I got here and it was 36 and humid, like 80% humidity. So I was just like, what is this? It's just kind of like not as tropical as somewhere that has a more moderate climate. It still, I guess, feels a little bit more desolate than tropical, which I wasn't really expecting, but it does feel a bit more like home for me, I guess.
So we're dealing with a professional baby catcher, and we're going to talk about investing. So let's start with, what does money mean to you?
It's been quite a journey for me, I think. As you said, I grew up in remote NT, so I didn't know anyone with money. My family holiday was to visit my grandparents. There was nothing fancy in my world. I got into modelling as a teenager, so that was my first kind of insight into that world. I got to travel. The first time I got to go overseas, I was 18, and I went. I got flown to Dubai Fashion Week, so wow. I really got thrown into this other world. Which, yeah, I guess I got a bit of culture shock, you could say, but had some really cool experiences. Like, I didn't love it at the time. I didn't think I loved it because it was not, what I wanted to be doing. I didn't think it was something that would be seen as like a good thing. I didn't feel like I was doing good in the world. But I got to be around money, people who had money. I was living in Turkey at one stage, and we had a week off, and people were offering to fly me to different islands to sail from, Greece to, wherever. It was just wild to be able to like go on crazy boats and things that I wouldn't have otherwise had any kind of exposure to. But then I think I really backflipped from that and saw that, people weren't happy and it didn't mean anything. Like, I didn't really feel good. So then I kind of left that world and started traveling really frugally. Like, I'd backpack and couch surf and hitchhike around Morocco and just, try and live off absolutely nothing. So I think I've been at either end of the spectrum, and I've certainly had a lot of time, like as a student, not having an income and, being on the very far end of that spectrum as well. So I think I've got kind of a balanced view of it now. Like, I can see it as a tool, and I can see my privilege to earn it. Like, I've been able to do some degrees and, have an opportunity to use it, make it and use it.
Yeah. And what got you thinking about investing in the first place?
So in 2020, I was totally broke. I was living in my van with my dog, and I went to stay with my grandma on her farm. I happened to be passing through there when the world kind of went into lockdown. And there was a copy of The Barefoot Investor there that I read in a day. And I had a friend, no, my cousin actually introduced me to the She's on the Money Facebook page. And that's where I kind of started picking up these concepts and just learning about little things. So from there, I followed a lot of finfluencers and listened to podcasts and read all of the books anyone recommended, and started micro investing. So it was little bits, it was $10 a week. Then from there, I found Perla and saw everyone's big investing goals, like investing 22K in the year 2022. And I thought, well, I can't do that, but what can I do? So it made me really imagine like how far I could push it. And I thought, what if I could invest 12 grand? So it really changed. It shifted the goals for me from like, maybe I could invest a few hundred dollars this year to like what's really possible here.
So that kind of vibe of I don't have much money, got a few books, got involved in this personal finance ecosystem, got you thinking about it, and we are a few years into investing. Could you say why you invest today? Like, do you have actually I invest because?
For sure. Yeah, I guess like I the way I look at the FIRE community, like I know other people say really different things about it and like I understand those different concepts, but I think it's more the idea of financial freedom. I've probably missed the boat to retire early, but for me, it's more about building like a solid foundation now. I feel like I need to catch up. I feel like I'm behind, but to be able to have some form of financial freedom, like before having children, so I can spend as much time at home with them as possible while they're young. So I just have this idea now that is similar to the FIRE movement, I guess, where if I hustle hard now for a few years, I can really set myself up and, be able to do that early.
Do you enjoy being a midwife?
that's a tricky one. Birth is something I've been really passionate about my whole life. I was born at home. My sister had her babies at home. Like it's, that's a really big, important thing for me. Like, you know, I don't want to get married, but I want to have my babies at home. That's my big thing. So that's why I did midwifery. And I think like most people, like most students, you get in there and realize that's not what it is the vast majority of the time. So I did really struggle in the degree. I did have a really hard time, especially being at a large tertiary hospital where there's a lot of intervention and a lot of people with really complex things going on. And that's why systems are in place for those people and for those things. So when someone comes in and just wants to have a nice natural birth, it doesn't always happen. And I found that really devastating and really hard to deal with. So it was interesting having conversations with different people and wondering if it was worth pursuing. And I'm really interested to see what happens now that I'm kind of out in the world and get to choose where I work and get to be a part of different things. So I will get back to you on that one.
Yeah, I think the reason I ask it is I just love I love the idea of financial independence. I love the idea of quote unquote retiring early, but it's more that for me personally, I've got this mindset that if I do what I enjoy and that is enjoyable, I think we all need some type of purpose, right? Because for sure. You had all the money in the world and you got up every day and didn't do anything, like it's a waste of a good person to add into society and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that was kind of – and, you know, that's kind of just why I'm just encourage everyone just to do what you enjoy at least. And then that could take away some of that Monday-itis, and notwithstanding, we do need to build future of a good financial future, right? So my terrible rant aside, since you started investing, do you think your view of money has changed?
I think, I'm sure it has. It's been, like, it's quite fun watching it, like, and it's kind of like a game. And I feel like before I really understood anything about it, or thought about it, everything was just sitting there and it was kind of like, oh, it's going to sit there until I've got enough to go back overseas or go traveling again. And now, yeah, you can kind of, gamify it and think, okay, so I'll set this goal and once I get there, like how much can I increase this by? And yeah, so I think it definitely has changed.
Yeah, awesome. And did you have any other financial goals that you wanted to attack before you started committing money to an investment account?
Not before, definitely as well as. My really big goal is to buy a house, which is, a massive life goal for the next few years. But, yeah, I've moved so much. I've lived in many different states and just having so much instability in my life and the cost of that, I've just done it again recently and just thinking about, you sell everything, you have to start again. Just even those little things like clearing out your pantry or whatever, just buying things that you're like, I can't believe I'm buying this again. So I'm feeling, really called to start building community and laying down roots and, planting a garden. And I've had 30 houseplants and had to sell them and I studied permaculture. And I just want some dirt. I want some dirt of my own. So
I so resonate with that. Like, being a renter myself, I've had to just get rid of all my plants. I've got one peace lily that's indoor that's my vibe that I take with me because it's just really, I don't know, I just love the idea of having a garden, but I can't actually have one when you don't have solid roots, and don't excuse the pun. What location would you want to buy a house in and quote unquote settle down?
This is something I am still really struggling with. I think the town I grew up in is so special, and if I wasn't from there, that's probably where I'd live. But, you know, it always just feels like going backwards, and I've gone back so many times. I've gone home so many times, but I feel like I have also been so lucky to live in so many different places, and I know, you know, how good things can be, and there's good things everywhere. So, yeah, I'm also having a bit of difficulty with what I can afford versus where I want to live. At the moment, I'm thinking like Sunshine Coast, Hinterland, but we'll see.
To be confirmed. So when you started, and I guess when you got your financial investing awakening, you know, Nan's house and all that stuff, what was your first investment?
So I got Raise. That was my first micro investing account, and I had it on $10 a week. So it just ticked away in the background for quite a while.
And if we fast forward now, like, what do you invest in now? You mentioned Perla before. Are you still using that brokerage?
I am still using Perla. So I was pretty, I guess, apprehensive maybe about what I was investing in. That was really important to me. Like, I didn't, and just like not wanting to invest in certain companies and then saying that to people, you know, like trying to get some advice and then seeing what other ETFs people were investing in, and then being like, oh, but that's got this in it. And they were like, who cares? I was like, oh, okay. So just really understanding that people had different values and ideas about what they wanted to put their money into. So I went on Perla and found a few of the like ethical ETFs, and then Googled those and researched what those companies were. So I couldn't tell you now, you know, that was years ago when I started, and that was like my initial like, okay, that sounds good. And yeah, I've just stuck with those ones.
And what are those ETFs?
So EFI, which is my best performing one.
What's the ticker code for EFI?
ETHI, EFI, which is
the
global sustainable one, which is up, like my portfolio is up 32%, nearly 33%.
Over how long since inception?
2 years, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, sweet. And what else?
VGE,
yeah,
which is just like a Vanguard emerging markets. IMPQ.
What's IMPQ?
It's eInvest Future Impact Small Caps Fund.
Yes.
So I think they had a little video that they'd produced, and I was like, okay, these are like the little guys. Like, I want to give them a hand. That hasn't been doing so well, but I feel like maybe over the long term, like maybe I've just got in really early and it hasn't got up there yet. So, yeah, so we'll see what happens there.
Any other ETFs?
ERTH, which is a Beta Shares one as well, like a climate one, and CLNE, which is a global clean energy. So yeah, a lot of
who's
like,
the fund manager for that one?
Vanguard.
Yeah, cool. Question, and you might not have the answer because I certainly don't have the answer. You've got an ethical lens over your investing. VGE sounds like it could be the outlier there.
Yeah, I think so too. It was, I don't know. And this is the thing. I feel like I've had zero guidance. I don't know anyone else who invests in ETFs. So I do feel like I've gone quite, you know, I don't claim to be educated at all in this department. So
neither do I.
I would love some guidance from anyone, but I feel like that was my, you know, ETFs are so diversified anyway, but am I just buying a lot of the same thing? And if it all, you know, if that doesn't work, then am I not in a good position?
Yeah, so I just brought up VGE. I mean, one, I don't think you're going to be overlapped because 26% is China, 22% is India, 19% is Taiwan, 6% is Brazil. And then it goes down Saudi Arabia, South Africa. I think for me, the my comment about outlier was the ethical lens, where
for sure.
If someone said, oh, invest $1,000 in an ethical ETF, I mean, it's not going to be VGE for me.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to kind of scratch that, like what was the appeal for that? Because it was emerging markets and a more, I guess, exposure to potential growth. So one thing I wanted to ask, you know, you mentioned ETHI 30% over 2 years. Like that's an awesome return.
Mm.
You're aware that that's not normal?
Yeah, I am.
And have you started to dance with that risk profile, like what you would do? Because one of the other women I interviewed had a similar experience, like really good returns over a short period of time. And it's that dance of this is awesome, we love it, but it will likely be in the red 1 year. And have you kind of reconciled how you're going to react? And I don't know, like in terms of that whole risk profile?
Not really, just because in my head this is my retirement. This is, you know, this is 30 years away. So yep. I, you know, go on there to have a little look, but I've not sold any of these and I don't know if that's something that I'll do.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool. So you said like you're investing for 30 years. Like where does the superannuation argument come in for you?
So my super is almost non-existent. I was a right. freelancer for a long time. Like I modelled and then I worked in the film industry. So I have almost nothing. And I started to look at it when I started uni, and that was around the same time I was just learning everything. And I learned about the government co-contribution. So I went and in my uni break I went on a film job for a few weeks, field producing. And yeah. So I had a nice solid chunk of cash from that. And so it was June right before the cutoff. So I chucked $1,000 in there and that was my first government co-contribution. So I'm starting to build it up. I will salary sacrifice and I will use the first homeowner super save scheme as well.
Yeah.
But at yeah, the moment it's nothing. And if I have a few years off to have kids, it's not going to grow very far. So,
yeah,
I can't count on it, basically.
Yeah. But I think I would probably just plant the seed, you know, for longer-term wealth creation. Like you said, you're 30, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, in 30 years, you'll be 60. If you retire at age 60, you can access your super, and it is the most tax-effective portfolio that you could have. So mm-hmm. It's cool that you're going to be thinking about salary sacrifice. So like within all that, do you have any specific investment goals or is it just shoveling money, building wealth?
I do. I have this very maybe almost nonsensical idea that I want to have $100,000 invested before I have kids. And I know that's awesome. Not something I can control. And that's my target. That's what I have in my head. And, yeah, if I get there, I get there. Yeah, we'll see.
I would say as well, like this is really cool because, number one, because you've just been through all your training and placements and whatnot, and this is far out. There's a good discussion here about, you know, different careers that people have. Like you're still a young person and into your kind of second career, right? And I think what I'm saying is you'll be surprised how fast your portfolio increases once you start to get a good full-time salary happening.
100%.
And, you know, having that 100 grand invested before you have children, I mean, most mums listening to this right now, having that amount of money is a life changer because it gives you the options.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I might draw down some of that to live off while I'm taking time off work, or I'm, you know, my superannuation is 10 grand a year behind or something like that. Well, I'm just going to carve off money and contribute it to super, or I don't know. Like, I just think when it comes to money, more is more. Yeah. And options. Yeah.
So. That's it. And like I said, like the goal for me isn't like early retirement. I think, time at home with young children is my value. That's really important to me. And that's kind of what the focus is on now. Being able to have options around that.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. When we think about other people listening to this, and someone might not have started to invest or is unsure what to do, do you have any unsolicited advice that we can shove down their throat?
Yeah, I'd give a lot of unsolicited advice to every young person in my life.
Yeah.
All of the young people in my life cop it constantly because I just wish I learned sooner. I wish I had this information as a young person. So, yeah, all of my little cousins and all the young girls at work, I just bombard them with with content. Yeah, just start. It's easier said than done. But, yeah, the steps I followed were go on Perla, see what they sell, look it up, and if it sounds like something you're into, just buy it.
And the thing is, like, most people getting started, right, like, I'm going to go out on a limb right now. So go with me, Grace. When you just got started and you purchased ETHI, VGH, IMPQ, ERTH, CLNE, I'm going out on a limb to say you didn't put $1 million in that account. Fair limb to go out on. Fair. So because you got started, if you do fall over, have a grazed knee and, you know, there's a couple of things or you're learning, you're not doing it with this wholesale amount of money.
Yeah.
Like, all money is important, but if you did get started with $500, if you did get started with $1,000, a 20% loss is a really good lesson to learn.
Mm.
So that's kind of, I think, a really good thing. Like, get started, realistically can't wreck it.
What's the Warren Buffett quote? It's like they asked him what his biggest regret was, thinking it was going to be some dud purchase, and he said, the stock I didn't buy.
Yeah.
Just buy it. See what happens.
Yeah, that's right. So it's just about getting started. Whether you're Grace in Broome delivering babies or the Oracle of Omaha, Warren Buff, we've just got to get started. Now, if you started today from scratch, knowing everything that you know now, would you do anything differently?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. All on Bitcoin. I think
pretty much. Yeah.
I just wish I had, an extra 10 years. I wish, wish I knew at 18. I don't regret doing anything. Like, I think all of that has, absolutely, like, made me who I am. You know, you're a product of all your collective experiences. But I just wish I'd put $50 a week somewhere, just a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
Because it would have added up.
Yeah. So anything else that you want to leave with everyone listening today? It can be anything, really. Like, this is your platform to say anything. Doesn't even have to be about money. If you're passionate about something.
Yeah. People listening, I think for the majority, already have their foot in the door. You know, they're already in the right place. They're already learning. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Grace, for sharing a bit about your story, how you're investing. And we wish you all the success with your life and money from here on out.
Thank you.
Rightio, up next, we've got Nikita sharing a little bit about her investing story and journey. Nikita, thanks for jumping on This Is Money.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Well, look, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe your age, your situation, your work, just everything just to set the scene?
Absolutely. So I'm Nikita. I moved to Melbourne about 7 years ago from New Delhi, India. I'm currently 32 years old. So when I moved to Australia, I was 25, very excited, had a lot of big dreams. And I came to Australia and I realized that, life's very expensive here. And I think that's how I got onto my investing journey. And I did come across your podcast, which is fabulous, through a lot of different groups that I was in. I do enjoy dancing and doing yoga in my free time. And for my full-time role, I am a brand marketing manager for a big consumer electronics retailer.
Yeah, awesome. And are you in a relationship? You're living with someone? What's that personal situation like?
Yep. So I am currently in a de facto partner relationship with my partner, who I met 5 years ago in Australia.
Awesome. And I was leading the witness there a little bit, everyone. I just wanted to let everyone know that, part of Nikita's story is she has a partner and no kids. And we just wanted a bit of a different variety of situations. So, okay, when it comes to our investing mindset and philosophy, what does money mean to you?
Oh, okay. So this one's really interesting because I grew up with my parents who were very, they were big tight asses. Like I think a lot of South Asian parents are. My parents worked really hard. My father and my mom, they had a very strong agreement on how my dad used to work like 16, 17 hour days working on his business with the family. And mom used to look after me and my brother. So she was responsible for budgeting. Dad was responsible for making all the money. And growing up, we used to be incentivized. Like if I got 90% at school, I'd be allowed to go attend dance classes. So I used to strive for 90% so I'd be able to go to dance classes. And well, growing up, I used to think, okay, we didn't have a lot of money, or like we actually had a lot of money growing up. I realized that we were very privileged kids. But like, you know, I used to always feel like when I grow up and I'll start making my own money, all I'll do is spend on dance classes, buying clothes, eating out, watching movies, everything that mom used to budget for. And then when I grew up, I realized, oh no, now I have to spend on all of that, but I have to also look after myself, have to think about my future, think about investing for my future. So I think that's what inspired me to start looking into investing. And there's like a few other factors as well that we'll go into as we speak more.
So the money thing, if I'm like hearing you correctly, to you, money means a potential more control over your future?
100%, yeah.
If you want to now do dance classes, if you've got money, just pay for it. You don't have to work for it and get a good grade is a crazy example. Yeah.
Yeah. I think now I look at more as what is my rich life, directly quoting Ramit Sethi from the Netflix show. And I absolutely love that idea that as a grown-up, money for me is the freedom to think and control my life, spend money on things that add value to my life, and not spend money on things that do not make me happy anymore, not doing anything out of peer pressure anymore.
Mm. Yeah, and for your situation, having said all that, it was like, well, if I've got money, I can invest it and grow to guarantee that I get the options later in life.
Absolutely. I think I also realized growing up in the South Asian community, this is not true for everyone, but a lot of people I saw around myself, especially women who were in relationships where they didn't want to stay. And that really motivated me to get up, make my own money, think about investing so that I'm never in a position where I walk away with anything less or compromising on my future either. So building my own rich life, but at the same time, having that freedom to walk away from, say, an abusive relationship. Or if I have, like, it's part of my culture where we do look after our parents in their retirement and being in a position where I can help my mom if required.
Yeah, totally. And when did you start investing?
I think a lot of it came from my parents always invested in gold, being Indian parents. So they would all, they incepted this idea of investing in gold on in term deposits and whatnot from a very young age. So when I had my first job at 21, I started putting money away for a term deposit. That time I did not know that it did not grow very well. But I was too busy spending and going out with friends. And we have a big going out culture in India. That's what I did. But I moved to Australia when I was 25 and I had to start saving for a visa. I had to provide for myself. I was only allowed to work 20-hour work weeks as per my student visa guideline. So I would have to make sure that I can run my house, I can live my life by working only 20-hour work weeks. And I was really fond of traveling because I could not travel a lot when I used to live in India because of really bad entry-level salaries. So it was very hard to save money for anything else. So I started working really hard and trying to find ways to cut expenses everywhere, find a very cheap share house and everything to start saving money for traveling. And then I did do a month-long trip in Southeast Asia and then another trip to Europe in 2019. And I was exploring all options like couch surfing, Airbnb being my living room. Don't tell my old landlord. But a lot of other things, even Uber Eats deliveries and name a job, and I was doing it to save money to travel. And I also had to save around $11,000 for my partner visa. Unfortunately, at that time, my partner was still studying, so I did not want to ask him for help, and I did not want to ask my family back in India for any help. So I put my head down, I got a second job in hospitality, a graduate level job in marketing, and saved around $11,000 in about 8 months.
It's fascinating to hear that when most of us have a goal that is critical, it's funny how hard work and a savings plan just appears, right?
Just yeah.
A bit of that pressure to make something happen. Now, since you started investing, even over the last, we'll just call it the last 5 years of you being established here in Australia, has your view on money slightly changed since you've established here and since you have started investing?
Yes, absolutely. I think that whole process of having that savings goal or I'd have to leave the country really motivated me to get into the habit of saving. But now that I'm more established, I've increased my income, I still continue to hustle just for extra things like nicer things in life, going on a camping trip with family or just like saving for getting my eyelashes done for my birthday. So yes, I definitely think that I spend more money because I save, will buy more quality appliances or get better furniture instead of getting everything off the street or Facebook Marketplace. But definitely it has increased the value of investing and that good night's sleep that I get every time I look at my portfolio, which I know I shouldn't be looking on a daily basis, but when it's on an app, you're just like, let me have a look.
Yeah, totally. Now, before you really started investing even over the last 5 years here, apart from that big slog of $11,000 and the visa and all that, were there any other goals that you kind of really wanted to attack before you started investing?
I think travel was a big one. After coming back from Europe, I really wanted to save more and more and go explore another country or go explore another part of Australia every year. And that's what I really wanted to do. I wanted to make sure that I traveled to as many places as possible in my 20s. I'm 32 now. But COVID hit when I turned 27 and there went my plans to travel. But I think since then, my goals have absolutely changed. Now, I do see a lot of value in homeownership, and that's something that is my next step. And I sat down with my partner and we calculated how much we can save, what we can do, and that's the next goal that I'm working towards. But no, not really. I think at the start, I was just like very unclear about home ownership, if this is something that I want because of all the maintenance costs, renovation costs, and it's a lot. So I just was like, okay, I am saving an X amount every month. I have been able to pay for everything. I'm living a pretty good life. Here is, say, for example, $1,000 a month that I can find. And I should start looking at places where I can at least keep this money for some time till the time I figure out what my long-term investing goals are.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, you mentioned your partner. So in a de facto relationship such as yours, how do you both work through joint goals and how do you bring them on board? Or is it pretty organic? Or are you kind of trying to push a rope? Or is it like herding cats? How do you manage and navigate money together?
I think it's a lot of ebbs and flows. We started with having completely separate investment goals, very separate investment accounts. And I think we still do that because it works for us at the moment. So we're working towards that house deposit goal together because it'll be something that we buy together. But in terms of our equity, share market, investment, we've tried to keep it very separate because I've been listening to all the different podcasts and I know what kind of an investor I am. I don't like to take a lot of risk and that's why I prefer investing in ETFs that track the index funds. But my partner has also invested in a lot of blue chip Australian stocks. Some of them have been given to him by his grandparents or his dad. So we've tried to keep that very separate. And I think our objectives are very clear. We both want to invest for our retirement and we don't want to touch that. That's why even starting to save for a house deposit, we started with $0.
Yeah, and I think the key is the strategy of we both want to invest for the future. We're on board with the strategy, but the tactics, I've got my account, this is my style. He's got his account and that's his style. That can be different, but you're on the same page with your life direction, right?
Yes, 100%. I think the only time we had a bit of a conflict was when I was investing in crypto and he was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, we'll keep moving. Did you make any money, though, from crypto, or was it a disaster?
Well, a little bit here and there, but then it went down 70%, and now I'm just waiting for it to go back up. I think today, as of today, I'm 25% down, so it's grown.
Wow, you must have been into some hectic speculative coins, were you?
Yes, I think I did go on a journey where I was trying to listen to different technical analysis every day, deciding what coin I wanted to buy. I think it was a bit of a COVID fever there as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if you hold Bitcoin at the moment, you're very much back in the green.
Yes, I am. I'm actually positive on Bitcoin.
Wild. So we won't talk about gold and term deposits from your childhood, but when you first started investing in, you said, ETFs in Australia, what was your first investment?
I think my first investment was buying ETHI, just because I'm just that person. I wanted to invest in an ETF that was more invested in ethical and sustainable and more renewable industry. And that's where I started. And I don't think I contributed more to that, because right after that, I fell into the Aussie FIRE movement and the FIRE movement globally, and started following a few podcasts as well as some newsletters, and just trying to put my faith in people who are very transparent about their portfolio. And that's where I discovered WAS, and I was like, okay, this is probably not the most ethical ETF to invest in, but...
But I love money, and I love money now. Don't you dare let an ounce of ethics stop a dollar from coming your way, all right? So what do you invest in as at today? Are you still in ETHI and VAS?
Yes. So ETHI, WAS, and VOO for the US stock market. I do hold some individual stocks. I think it's mostly Amazon and Apple, but that's not a big chunk of investing, very small percentage. And that's the plan, to mostly invest in index tracking ETFs. And every now and then, if I've got some extra money from my dividends or anything else, like if I'm really interested in a specific company, then purchase their individual stocks here and there. One thing that I'm really interested in going forward is looking at India. INDA and NDIA, both of these ETFs are on my radar, because Nifty 50 has performed really well in the last 5 years, and India growing at 7% as a whole economy at the moment gives me a lot of hope. I know I shouldn't be an emotional investor at all, but again, it's looking very positive for India. So that's something that's on my radar.
Yeah, and I think it's not a bad thing to be a little bit emotional, because I think it does keep you somewhat in the game, but it just all comes back to diversification and knowing that your core is VAS, VU, ETHI, like... Yeah. So how regularly do you invest?
Right now, I have stopped investing in ETFs because I'm saving for the house deposit. So all the amount that was going towards my investments is now going towards a high interest savings account to save for my deposit. I did not want to put that in stake because I've learned from the best.
Yeah. Now, what do you think the time horizon is for you to both get to the target deposit amount for the home?
We yet to meet a mortgage broker, but we're planning to do that in the second quarter and understand how much we can borrow at our current salaries at the moment and whatever money we've saved so far. And I think we'll determine what percentage of deposit we need and then take a call accordingly. Fortunately, we're in a very good position right now. We're renting from my partner's mum in the city. So it's a very nice apartment, and she's not making a lot of money by renting it out to us. So we're not in an uncomfortable position rental-wise, We want to make the most of it.
All I would say is just don't forget to have a look at the First Home Super Saver Scheme.
Yeah.
Because it's basically a tax-saving play where you can flush money through there. So what platform or broker do you use? Was it Stake, you said before?
Yeah, I'm actually a bit spread out. I know it's not the best thing to do, but... I think when I started saving to go to Europe, I downloaded Raise, and I was regularly putting money into it to save for Europe. And I kept that account. I never took that money out. So I've got a Raise account, which has grown beautifully after COVID. And I have Stake, which is my main investing platform at the moment. And then I've got SwiftX, which is for crypto.
Yeah. I think Razor's cool. Like the Razor Awards is pretty cool, but I think it's just like any kind of cashback app now. They've all got access to a heap of different things. But I think I've still got a Razor account and it's like $100 in there just for the rewards.
That's really good. I use Shopback for cashbacks, which is, again, a really good app. But I was at one point of time investing, I think, $200 a week into Raise. So I did build it up, and this was right before COVID. So it hit rock bottom and then it recovered rapidly.
Yeah. And if we were, one of the questions I was going to ask you is what your investing goals are at this time. It's basically just to pause on the investing, focus on the house deposit. My question is, have you resolved that you would be prepared to potentially sell some of your investments to bring that house deposit sooner? If a mortgage broker said, you can go ASAP if you, I've had a spare 20 grand over here and move that into the deposit. Is that a trade-off that you're willing to make?
I don't think so at this point. I honestly don't want to give away that sort of a nest egg that I've built in my stake account. Home ownership is important to me, but given the kind of family dynamic that I come from, I know that I'll always have a home. So it is a dream, but I am not rushed to get to that dream yet.
Yeah. And the importance of having, you're in a de facto relationship, so the law says what's yours is mine and what's mine is yours and all that. But there is that physical feeling of security that you would have just having that money in your own account, right? This is my investment account and I've got 100% control and autonomy on this account.
100%. And the fact that my visa is not final yet, it'll be really good to have a bunch of money. As to be honest, I think you'll think this is stupid, but I've got my emergency fund, like half of my emergency fund in cash. And I think that came from the fear after the war situation in Ukraine.
So, sorry, you mean like physical cash, like notes?
Yes.
Okay, cool. No, that's fine. Like, because sometimes I tell people, just put money in cash. Like, what? Have $15,000 under the mattress. I'm like, no, in the bank account. But you're saying you physically hold notes.
I do hold a certain percentage of my emergency fund in cash.
And what is your home address?
To be honest, that is a big fear. I'm also a big true crime fan.
So. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
That's the two type of podcasts I listen to, money podcasts and true crime.
So swing back around the rationale with the Ukraine war of why it was important for you to have that money physically in cash.
I think it was also a lot of news around people of color being treated differently during the war. And just those kind of scenarios sometimes don't make you feel like you're at home or you'll be given any sort of equal treatment in a situation like that. And I think that's why I was working in hospitality in a second job at that time, and they used to pay me in cash. And I just started putting that in a box. And I was like, okay, if something that extreme ever happens, I am good to go. I can probably get a train ticket or a plane ticket to somewhere if my bank account is not accessible. I know it's a bit silly now, but it's just a fear that I had as a person of color.
I don't think it's silly at all, because at the end of the day, we all do stuff that looking in might not be rational or normal, but you just do what you want. Like, I do stuff where it's just like, this makes no sense, but I do it for this reason. And I think what you're saying, it does make a lot of sense for you. But, like, I personally have cash here at home for no other reason than if I need cash. And, again, it's that we may be cut from a similar cloth as, like, if all else fails, there is cash in that drawer there. So, I don't even think that's crazy. I mean, maybe taking a punt on specky cryptocurrencies would be considered more crazy. I don't know. but, no, I think it's personal finance, it goes back to I do this way and you have results from that way. So why would you stop doing that? And because if you didn't put that cash in the bank account, the results of you feeling comfortable isn't there. So we're not getting results from that way. And I think it's just like anything. If you went to the one extreme and you had a tinfoil hat on and you sold everything and we sold all my shares and everything and I had $200,000 in cash only and, you know, that's an issue. But no, I think it's really cool that you've done something to make you feel comfortable.
Yeah. Again, it is all right to me because it's not a lot of cash. That's why I said it's just a percentage of my emergency fund, but it does help me sleep better at night, knowing that if something was to happen, I can at least buy myself an opportunity to get out of that situation.
Yeah, cannot agree more. So in finishing up, what would you say to anyone who's listening who hasn't yet started to invest or is unsure what to do?
Oh, this is something that I tell all the interns at my work who are just 20-something-year-olds saving money to go to Pitch Festival or some other festival. Start saving early as soon as possible. Educate yourself. Learn about investing, even if it's something very simple that works for you, like ETF investing. Just spend the time, learn about it, and even if it's $10 extra every week, start investing.
Because if you started with, you know, you talked about Raise. You've started with Raise or, you know, Sharesy's been a sponsor on this podcast as well. And you started with $10. You can't wreck it because if you did lose that $10, your life isn't over, but you've learned and you've got involved, right?
Absolutely. And I think every time I invest any amount of money, it builds so much confidence because I did start with spare change in Raise and it was only like a few cents. Coffee change here and there. But when I did see that build up to a certain amount that I could use, say, for a holiday, it gave me more confidence that, okay, if investing 40 cents is working, imagine if I was to, say, invest $1,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 whenever I can afford it, and how much and how fast will that grow for me and how much better it will make me feel as I grow older.
Yeah. If you started investing today, so you didn't have Raise, you didn't have Stake, you didn't have your little Amazon shares, which you've probably done very well with, and your VU, your VOO and your ETHI, you had nothing and you were starting today from scratch, would you do anything differently? If yes, what?
I think the only thing that I would do differently is go back 15 years in time and start investing. And maybe if I was in Australia when I was 20, 21, I would consider buying a house sooner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't all of us want that now?
It's so wild. It is the biggest problem. So is there anything else that you'd want to say, give any advice to or encourage people to look into or anything like that in relation to money and investing?
Absolutely. I think one of the most important lessons that I got from the podcast, as well as a cousin telling me to do this multiple times, was to always look at your super, consolidate your super. If you've got different accounts, multiple accounts, look at your super, consider your risk appetite and find the right super for you. And the other thing that I found really helpful was to educate myself through books and podcasts. It's just a simple thing that I do on my commute to work. It takes me an hour to get to work, and that's the time that I utilize to educate myself more and more and then take all that research from the podcast to do further research and make better decisions about investing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Nikita, thank you so much for coming on This Is Money and sharing a little bit of your story that we can share with the other women who have come on and had a chat about money and investing. Thank you so much.
No worries. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, I would like to thank Grace, Rachel, Victoria and Nikita for sharing their story about how they invest today. I was really encouraged by the chats and I hope you were too. If you want to continue the discussion around investing, you can check out our newest podcast called Financially Fierce. It's hosted by Jess Brady, and there are some good episodes up there to continue this investing discussion. It is also launched this week to celebrate International Women's Day. I'd also like to thank ShareSite for helping us bring this episode to you. Remember, ShareSite is a comprehensive online portfolio tracking and management platform designed to simplify investment tracking for individuals, self-managed super funds, and financial professionals. It enables users to effortlessly monitor the performance of their investments across various asset classes, including your shares, ETFs, managed funds, and even crypto. But get this, you've got to remember this. You can plug your various platforms and brokerages into your ShareSite account, so you'll get one consolidated report for all your holdings at the end of each year. So invest in yourself today. Visit the link in the show notes to get started today and receive 4 months free of their premium plan exclusive to This Is Money listeners. My name's Glenn James. Thank you so much for hanging out today. It was such a wholesome chat. Make sure you check out the Financially Fierce podcast. I'm really excited for this show because, hey, it's another voice that isn't me, and that's what we need out there. I'll see you soon.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. If you are interested in furthering your education around money, your career or property, we have 3 books that might help. Check out Sort Your Money Out, Sort Your Career Out and Sort Your Property Out. Find these wherever good books are sold or via the link in the podcast show notes. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.